The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You, and I'm your guest host filling in for John Ryan. I'm Rebecca Miller, the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Services for the Aging, the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence. And my co-host today is David Linden.
Good morning, David,
a Project Independence member, and welcome. Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. We provide programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who want to remain in their own homes as they age. Services include transportation for food shopping and medical visits, help at home with minor home maintenance, nursing and social work services, fitness classes, community education, information and referral, anything that's needed. If we don't currently provide the service, we will try and connect you to that service. You simply call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or request services. One of the programs of Project Independence is this weekly radio show, heard every Friday morning from 10 a.m. to noon on WCWP.org. Today's show promises to be a very special one. Our first guest is Dr. Preeti Chandra. Dr. Chandra is a cardiologist with Advantage Care Physicians. After speaking with Dr. Chandra, our next guest will be Tony Rover, creator of StuffSeniorsNeed.com. Following Tony, it's time for the old-time radio segment, Boston Blackie Alice Manletter, Dead or Alive. We'll wrap up the show speaking with Christina Liu, our Project Independence Senior Citizen Program Development Specialist for the Town of North Hempstead's Department of Services for the Aging, and our radio show producer. Dr. Chandra, I want to welcome you to Project Independence and You radio show, and thank you for coming out. I hear we've hit the 5-degree mark, so we're really warming up today.
Thank you for having me, Rebecca.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming out. Dr. Chandra, we talked a little bit about the fact that February is recognized as Heart Health Month. We also talked a little about how we hear things about know your blood pressure, understand your cholesterol profile, exercise, eat right. We understand that there's a different heart regimen for women versus men. We also hear lots of recommendations that come out and sometimes change. Studies that change the way we're supposed to exercise for 20 minutes every other day or 45 minutes every day based on certain, I guess, your health criteria. So one of the things we're curious is, how would you determine what is best for your patient or an individual?
Great question, Rebecca. So let me start out by saying that heart health is a common goal we all want to achieve, but we need to tailor treatment and tailor preventive steps towards each patient depending on what they are capable of doing. For example, I have some people who have a hip replacement. They're not very comfortable running, jogging. For them, the best exercise might be something like swimming, which doesn't involve them using their hips. So there is no one-size-fit-all approach towards cardiac health, but there are basic guidelines. And despite the fact that the data keeps changing and there are few studies saying 20 minutes is good for you, some say 30 minutes is good for you, but in general, if you look at all the guidelines that have been written, there are many commonalities, and we can kind of conclude that a little bit, maybe 20 to 30 minutes, five times a week, would be a good exercise regimen. It can be even light jogging. It doesn't have to be something strenuous. You don't have to run a marathon. Whatever is comfortable for you and which will not hurt you. On the same token, I would go about saying that don't risk yourself to run in the cold, run in the snow. Do what is safe. If you have a treadmill at home, use that. And even if you want to do something light like Pilates or yoga or swimming, whatever suits each individual, they should go with whatever they are comfortable. Yeah.
If I understand you correctly, what you're saying is do something.
Absolutely right. You nailed it, David. I think we have to do something. We have to get out there, motivate ourselves. And as we start doing a little bit, I often tell my patients that start out with 10 minutes. And that seems very doable. And once you start doing 10 minutes and in a few months you get comfortable with those 10 minutes, you can slowly increase that number to 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Right. And then eventually it's something that you want to do.
And be aware of signs that the body may be giving them at the same time. If it hurts somewhere, stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Pain is a protective mechanism that we have, and that prevents us from causing more injury to the body. So definitely don't ignore signs from your body. Just to give a little bit of quantitative information about exercise, how much is enough? The recommendation for physical activity from the CDC, ACSM consensus statement and Surgeon General report says that every American adult should participate in 30 minutes or more of moderate intense activity on most and preferably all days of the week. And I would kind of make it a little bit more subtle and say even if you do 5 out of 7 days and if you do 20 minutes instead of 30 minutes, it's definitely going to do you good. And this has been quantitated, not merely the fact that exercise is good for you, but it does increase longevity. And they have quantitated it. They took thousands of people, made them exercise, took thousands of similar people, mm-hmm. made them not do that level of exercise, and found that the group exercise lived much longer. So this is data that has been studied
right.
and quantitated.
So that's a good study. But all taking into account, it's really individual too, because like you were saying, you could have a patient who had a hip replacement and maybe has cardiac issues. That's going to change, you know, the recommendation for maybe the amount of time they should exercise or length of time or how vigorous their exercise is. So it's probably a great idea for people who are going to either be starting out to exercise to maybe talk with their cardiologist or their primary care physician and get a good individual plan, because like you said, everybody is different.
Absolutely.
Okay. One of the things that's confusing, and recently my uncle called me and said, Becca, I just don't understand my results from my cholesterol. Some numbers seemed higher than others, but other numbers were so good that I'm fine and I don't have to have my cholesterol done again for another year. So I was wondering, could you help clarify how you kind of determine the I know there's a ratio involved, there's HDL, there's LDL, there's good cholesterol, there's triglycerides, there's bad cholesterol. So you see some numbers, but I guess if you look at that all as a whole is really how you determine whether somebody is in, you know, needs medication or something like that.
That's, again, a great question from Rebecca. And we have a lot of jargon. We have cut down the cholesterol components into so many different small fractions, and we try to make sense of those. But as an easy guideline, I would tell all the listeners of this show that cholesterol is basically classified into bad and good cholesterol. And your goal is to keep the good cholesterol high and bad cholesterol low. It's as simple as that. So how low and how high? Good cholesterol, let's go with the good first. Good cholesterol is essentially a product of how each one of us has a genetic makeup. So in the sense, there's little that we can do to increase our good cholesterol except for exercise.
May I just one thing? I know the question was usually referred to as HDL and LDL. Could you tell our listeners which one of them is the bad and which one is the good?
Great. So HDL is the good cholesterol.
High.
And we want it as high as possible. The current recommendation is more than 40. And if you are above it, then great, because that means it's probably blessed with good genes and you also exercise. If not, you can increase it, and there are some ways to increase it, like exercise, consumption of omega-3 fatty acids, maybe fish oils. But I would go on to say that it's easier to reduce bad cholesterol than to improve good cholesterol. It's much easier. You can do a lot to lower your bad cholesterol. So LDL is the bad cholesterol, and what is the number that you should be below that is good for you? varies with your risk factor profile. So that's something that I would encourage each one of you to discuss with your physician as to where is your risk profile, in the sense, at what risk do you stand? Are you a high risk? Are you a moderate risk? Or are you a low risk individual? And if you're a high risk individual, the targets that we need to meet as far as bad cholesterol is concerned are much more stringent. For example, the LDL has to be lower than 70 in somebody who's already had a stent or has had a bypass surgery or has an established diagnosis of cardiac disease. Whereas in a healthy individual, the LDL goal is less than 130, which is easier to achieve. And obviously, in some individuals, that goal can be achieved by exercise alone and diet alone. And in some individuals in whom diet and exercise do not suffice, we have to go ahead and start medications.
You said risk factors. Could you define or explain to our listeners what are the risk factors?
Okay, the risk factors for coronary artery disease are, number one, family history. If you find that either of your parents or siblings have an established diagnosis of coronary artery disease, have a stent, have had a bypass, have had a heart attack, that puts you at a higher risk than an individual who doesn't have family history of coronary artery disease. Second thing is diabetes. If you're diabetic, that increases your propensity to have heart disease. Third thing is your habits. Are you a smoker? Are you sedentary? Do you sit in front of a computer screen all day? All those things will increase your risk, your lifestyle, your habits. And fourth thing, are you someone with high blood pressure? High blood pressure is essentially a problem for the heart because the heart has to pump against a high blood pressure system. You're making your heart work harder. So high blood pressure is also a risk factor for heart disease.
All right. That was going to be my next question, to kind of talk a little bit about knowing your blood pressure. There are all kinds of things that can increase maybe a random blood pressure, maybe if you're going for a screening. What really is the best time to determine your actual blood pressure?
I wouldn't say any particular time is good, but I would suggest each one that when you go to the physician and you are kind of nervous and worried about seeing the physician,
right,
there's something we call white coat hypertension.
Yes.
Yes. So if you are someone who is scared of doctors, and most of us are, and that includes me, and then you probably want to calm down a little bit and then have your blood pressure taken.
Right.
You just don't want to rush into the doctor's office and the nurse slap the blood pressure cuff on your hand and take your blood pressure. So give yourself some time to relax. That's number one. And number two, don't go after an intense exercise. Exercise leads to your blood pressure transiently rising, but it mm-hmm. will fall. Don't go in a very anxious mood. That increases your blood pressure. And don't consume too much salt.
Okay. Yeah, salt. We'll stay away from salt. We're going to be taking a short break in just another minute. And when we come back, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about the difference between men and women and heart health, and kind of, do the risk factors differ? Are the medications different? Should we be exercising differently, eating differently? Are we looking at different types of symptoms when it comes to cardiac disease? So when we get back, maybe we could talk a little bit about that. We still have a little bit more time, but I think that the cholesterol explanation you gave was excellent, and really coming down to you as an individual. Family history, of course, very important. And then also maybe when we come back, we can talk a little bit about medication management. I know that a lot of us have to be on medication for cholesterol, blood pressure, maybe diabetes. We're taking maybe an aspirin for cardiac health, and we can address that as well when we come back. We've been talking with Dr. Preeti Chandra, and really learning a lot about heart health and kind of celebrating or recognizing the month. We'll be right back, so stay tuned.